Lo and behold, 28 minutes after the hour, just a tad late on this Transcendent Tuesday, but Don is waiting patiently in the wings here. Dr. Don Clark, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, a biochemist, a vintner, and a resident of Garden Valley, Texas. And we enjoy a visit with Don just about every Tuesday morning. Don, you were involved in something special here, some kind of a seminar, a review, a critique. The Texas State Senator put this on, and we just got wind of it from you. What was this all about, and what did we learn from this?
Oh my goodness, this was a information packed conference. It was all afternoon, October the 29th, Sunday, October the 29th. It was held here in Tyler, so I was able to go to it, as well as several other folks from our church. But it was basically looking back at COVID and the draconian measures that were taken during that time. What was behind all of the draconian measures and the vaccine and the mask mandates and all of that type of stuff, the adverse events, for example, what the hospitals were doing, why they were doing it, the lipid nanoparticles that got so much, didn't get so much attention until afterwards, cancer updates and your immune system, for example. They had about 15 or so speakers, MDs or PhDs in specialists in their fields, and they each had 15 minutes to talk, and they loaded up their talk. So I'm still waiting for information to become available with regard to either the putting together of their slides that they presented at the conference, or at least some conference notes. But we could talk in general about what was presented. And the first thing that was presented was where did the idea come from to lock down the way we locked down? Now, as you recall, I mean, good medicine up until COVID struck was, okay, you isolate the sick, but the general population can pretty much go free and not have to worry about getting sick if the ones that were sick actually are isolated. But that's not what happened. And what happened was they were putting into place a plan that was presented, implemented, or at least discussed. And it was a global plan. This wasn't just a plan in the United States, but there was a conference which was called the Event 201, where this was held in October 16th and 17th, 2019. A conference that was held in 2019. Now, what did they know that we didn't know at that time? And they gave out little pillows at this conference, and the pillows were the COVID-19 virus, were pillows of COVID-19 virus. This was, on everybody's seat at the conference. It was sponsored by John Hopkins Public Health, by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and by the World Economic Forum.
That's about what I was going to say. Who was they? Because that World Economic Forum includes the World Health Organization, doesn't it?
Well, they're members.
They're aligned.
Pretty much every leader in the world now is a member and of the World Economic Forum. And so this was pretty much a plan to say, here's what we need to do if we have a pandemic. If we have a pandemic, right? And they knew that the pandemic was coming because Fauci and the crew had engineered with the Chinese the COVID-19 pandemic, which you know, accidentally got released from the Wuhan lab. And Fauci, you know, as you know, Fauci denied it and denied it and denied it. But now we know he covered it up. And of course, you know, some of us knew from the very beginning that there was a big cover up, and Scripps Institute was involved in the cover up, even though they had helped in the engineering of this virus as well. So we had major things going on early on before COVID even struck, you know, the U.S. soils. Of course, you knew, you know, by March of 2020, we were beginning to start to see some implementation of these draconian ideas. But if
was the purpose of that 2019 meeting to warn about a possible pandemic? And maybe equip the world with how to react to it, protect itself. What was the purpose of meeting in 2019?
It was to plan how to respond to a pandemic.
Aha! That they knew was coming.
So, and part of the, of course, the implementation was locking people down. Because if you're, you know, if you have anything to do, if you, you know, if you know anything about the World Economic Forum, their charter is to basically world government. I mean, that's their charter. So how do we get, you know, people to basically subdue themselves so that they can be in agreement with being, you know, submissive to a world government? Is one of the ways is you instill fear in them. So
now, I like a conspiracy theory as much as the next guy. And did anything in the conference come up with the answer to the question, why would they do this? And was it spelled out specifically? Why would they do this? Was it to, you know, step four, we'd like to subjugate the population? I mean, did somebody actually come out and say that?
Well, they didn't say it at the conference I went to, and they basically just introduced the subject that, okay, this conference was held, and here was the here was the subject matter of the conference. And the presentation that you know, the person giving this information was that this was planned all along. This pandemic was not an accident; it was actually planned. And the way that the governments seem to be coordinated in their response. I mean, you would think some governments, you know, would say, well, that's not how we handle pandemics. This is how we're going to handle it. But, you know, you up until this time, you haven't seen a coordinated effort to lock down the population. And that's exactly what happened with the COVID pandemic. So that's, you know, I don't have any other information on that other than that there was this conference event. Maybe you can, you know, the folks can maybe Google event 201. And in this was October 2019 when this conference went on. And maybe there's some proceedings from the conference or something that.
Well, the fact that the World Economic Forum is a known quantity. We know what their purpose is, what their charter is. They held this thing that suggests there was an ulterior motive in doing this.
Oh, yes. Oh, for sure. There was an ulterior motive, and it was to pretty much, you know, move forward their agenda you know, try to get control of the world economy, first of all, and then, of course, the control of the whole population, you know, bowing down to, you know, to some folks in Europe who are in charge of the World Economic Forum, and having all the leaders pretty much come into lockstep with them and with their program. And so, you know, COVID, I mean, the World Economic Forum and Charles Klaus does not you know, they there is a book, there is a ebook on the, at least there used to be, a world the World Economic Forum website that says COVID-19 pretty much is the perfect thing for moving our agenda forward. And Charles Klaus actually wrote the book and outlines how it can be used to move the program forward. And so anyway, but that, you know, that's been out there since, you know, before the pandemic. And when the pandemic came about, you know, this was they don't even, you know, they're not even hiding this stuff anymore. If you want to do a little research on it, you can find their agenda, what they are planning. This is all laid out in all kinds of documents, any area, whether it's, you know, COVID-19, whether it's climate change, whatever it is, they're going to use in order to move their agenda forward. But I didn't want to necessarily talk about the World Economic Forum today, but what has happened since, what stimulated, for example, the protocols that were put in place in the medical communities, in particular the hospitals, where did those protocols come from? Well, the CDC issued protocols on how to treat COVID. The federal government was paying hospitals to a bonus, if you will, if they identified patients with COVID. And they had this experimental test method for COVID, which was called PCR, polymer chain reaction. Basically, that's the short for polymer chain reaction. It's a analytical tool. It was never devised to be a medical test, for example. And basically, that particular test, in general, it looks for DNA or RNA fragments. And so it's each cycle, then it kind of amplifies what DNA or RNA might be there. And then if you go through enough cycles, you know, you can get something that is in very minute quantity and then see whether or not it's present in your sample. Well, that's all well and good, but even in the laboratory, the test is irrelevant after 30 cycles. The government was saying you can go up to 40 cycles, and really the data gets real fuzzy after 17 cycles. And the government says, well, you can use this test and go up to 40 cycles and see if a patient has COVID. And if it comes out positive that the patient has COVID, regardless of the symptoms, whether or not the patient is coming in with any type of symptoms whatsoever, if this test, which wasn't validated, came up with a positive, and they were doing 40 cycles. I mean, in 40 cycles, you're getting past the signal to noise ratio. So it's just, you know, hit and miss as to whether or not it's going to be positive or not. But what was so important about having a positive test? If the hospital had a positive test on a patient, they got a bonus for treating that patient as a COVID patient. Even if they were in there for, a stroke or heart disease of some sort, or, you know, some other type of disease. It could have been pneumonia, or it could have been, you know, flu symptoms or whatever. If they came up with a positive test, a bogus test using the PCR at that number of cycles, they were given a bonus. And the patient was also, the hospital was also given a bonus if they followed the government's protocol, which meant treating the patient, putting the patient on a ventilator. So hence the rush to use all of these ventilators at the hospital. So they got a bonus for that. They got a bonus for treating the patient with remdesivir, which is a very dangerous drug and causes liver damage. And liver damage, it exposes itself as one of the signs of liver damage is that fluid builds up in your lungs. And so they treat people with remdesivir, fluid builds up in their lungs, and instead of stopping the treatment with remdesivir, they continue the treatment because the hospital is getting paid, and lo and behold, you know, the patient dies, and they attribute it to COVID because they had a positive test with the PCR. And if the patient died with COVID, guess what? The hospital got another bonus on top of it. So there were all of these financial incentives for the hospital to identify COVID patients, identify all patients that were positive with this PCR test as a COVID patient, regardless of the symptoms, and then proceed to treat them in such a way that was detrimental to the patient's health.
You know, I'm thinking back to a couple of years here and the sense of urgency about all this. And here's the world of science and medicine coming to world leaders and saying, this is going to kill your people. You need to do something. There had to be, this is a field where most leaders are lay people. They don't know the science. And I remember watching President Trump at the time in front of the nation talking about some of these measures. And my impression was he doesn't believe this. He doesn't believe, but he has no choice because the science experts, Fauci and Birx and the others were saying, this is what you got to do. He was trusting the science and he'd misplaced that trust. And well, that must have same thing that. Must have happened. They had to find a way to cross over from science to lay people and scare them to death. And a pandemic is the obvious tool, I think.
Yes, it was. It was the obvious tool, and it was used to its maximum advantage. You know, to advance, like I said, to advance the agenda, and. Basically, the bottom line: if you went into a hospital, and you got treated with the COVID protocol, more than likely you were going to die. You know, so you were in bad shape by the time you went to the hospital. But there were other treatment alternatives that were actually very effective, and. You know, those, of course, as you everybody recalls, they were being blacked out by the media. The government was involved with that. The government was involved with, for example, social media telling them that, okay, this information is false information, so you need to delete it from your servers and from your website and blackball this person because this person is you know, spreading misinformation. I mean, you know, up until this time we pretty much, you know, had the if you wanted to say something on social media, you could say it and, you know, people could react to it and then you go about your business. And but up in, when COVID struck, it was like a complete change in the freedom of information, in our First Amendment rights. Our First Amendment rights were being totally abused, and you know, doctors were being persecuted, basically kicked out of hospitals if they treated anybody with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, and blackballed. You know, taken up to the medical in administration, and pretty much blackballed from the hospital, and in some cases even practicing medicine. But you know, the people that were actually treating with these alternatives were saving people, whereas the other things that were being done, especially in the hospitals, were actually killing people. And so you had this unusual dichotomy where the hospitals, the medical, your established medical facilities were actually being detrimental to the public health. And they presented a lot of data, you know, on this at the conference. So I'm interested in getting the slides and the notes on that, so we can talk more about that at some point.
Well, a key question then would be, now that they've created this infrastructure for communicating the panic and the rules for handling a pandemic, can they use it again, or is all this coming to light now broadly enough to teach us a lesson about listening to these people?
Well, hopefully, you know, I think maybe 50% of the people, the same 50% that is more interested in the truth and what this was all about, they're certainly going to be educated, but the other 50% are going to go along with, what the government, is saying, just as they are doing even to this day in many, many areas. So there's many of us that are very suspicious of what the government activity is, what the medical community is going to be. Fortunately, some of the local governments are local, but I mean, you know, state governments are trying to fix some of the abuses that took place through the medical community. Like I said, the FDA is being sued because the FDA was telling hospitals how to treat. That is not the responsibility of the FDA, never been their charter, and they approve drugs. They should approve drugs by, you know, their key approval of a drug is safety. And then the other aspect of I was in drug development for many, many years in my professional career. And so the key aspect is safety. The next aspect is efficacy. So you've got to both prove that your drug is safe, or your medical treatment is safe, and that it's efficacious. That is, that it will benefit the patient. There is some patient benefit. Now, with the COVID vaccine, they also talked about the vaccine. They talked about masks, and we don't have time to talk about all these things, in one program. But the there was very little, as you recall, safety data accumulated by the pharmaceutical companies and by the companies that were developing the vaccines, and presented to the FDA, and almost no efficacy data.
Well, there was no clinical test. I got the feeling at the time, and you and we have talked about this. We were the clinical test. The population at
large. We were the clinical. Mm-hmm. Now, we were the clinical test, and, well, I wasn't the clinical test because I didn't take the vaccine, but those people who took the vaccine were the clinical test, and the Pfizer's vaccine, initially, they did some safety and some efficacy trials, but they changed the endpoint. And so, you know, when these vaccines came out, Pfizer said, well, our product is 98% effective. Well, that was one or two patients in, you know, the tens or 20,000s of the patients that they tested that, were different from the control group. So it wasn't a high, and then it was, we reduced, you know, first of all, it was, we prevented, COVID. Then it was, well, no, we didn't really prevent COVID. We reduced the symptoms of COVID. If you get the vaccine, you'll reduce the symptoms. And then ultimately, and this is CDC data, which was presented at the conference, ultimately, if you got the vaccine, you had a 1.5 times greater chance of dying with the vaccine.
With
that's
the vaccine.
50% more of more patients who took the vaccine died who did the, who basically did not take the vaccine. So you had a greater chance of dying with the vaccine. And of course, even today, that information isn't widely distributed. That information, you know, is you have to dig it out of the data, the VAERS, for example, database. And even CDC now is saying, well, okay, yeah, there seems to be some detrimental effects, especially long term, with taking the vaccine. But yet they're still, you know, promoting the vaccine, and they're coming up with new variants of the vaccine because we're now, you know, pretty far down the road. So the vaccine was detrimental. It didn't matter which vaccine you took, it was detrimental to your health.
We talked last week about this relative reporting of data, and let me repeat the example that we used. If a pharmaceutical company has a new drug, let's say for heart attacks, and so they do a clinical test, and let's say you have 2,000 people over the course of a year, half of which are taking the drug, the other half a panacea. And this is just a hypothetical example of the way they've been reporting data. At the end of the test, of those who had the drug, only one person died of a heart attack. But of those getting the panacea, two people out of many thousands died. So the pharmaceutical company says, because of this test, it's proven our vaccine is twice as effective as not having it. It's 100% proven.
Effective.
And it's a lie. When actually only one person got a heart attack and only two in the panacea group. So it's just an illustration of the way data can be manipulated. And I think maybe I am hoping we're smarter because of all this. I don't, especially government. I mean, there have to be some, I still remember the look on Donald Trump's face as he was standing behind Fauci and Birx and they were talking about all this. He had very little confidence, but he had no choice. He had no choice but to go with the experts.
At the time, because his advisors were saying, we need to listen to this guy because he's the expert in the field, supposed expert. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, obviously since then we've learned that he was the designer of the, or was funding the actual manufacturer of the COVID-19 virus in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have much to blame to Fauci and, you know, the leaders at the NIH in, you know, infectious diseases where Fauci worked.
Does this suggest that the vaccine escape release was intentional then? I mean, how could they
anticipate? We still don't absolutely know, but it probably was.
Yeah.
You know, we definitely know, and we knew early on that it came from the Wuhan lab.
Yeah.
Because it was designed, and even the people at Scripps, you know, they called and emailed and had meetings with Fauci saying that, you know, it looks like this virus has been engineered because it's got these, RNA markers, which are, you know, can only have come about through engineering. And gain of function, you know, type of research. And you recall Fauci was saying, there was no gain of function here. This was a all natural virus, and these viruses change over time and this, that, and the other. And lo and behold, yes, it was engineered. And yes, it was funded by the NIH ultimately. And it went to China because the government was cracking down on that gain of function research here in the United States. And so Fauci needed another laboratory. So he convinced Obama to fund a laboratory in China. And that's where
there's an overall pattern, a greater pattern here. And social media is Well, it could be, you could see it as social media being victimized by this, but they make all this possible so that half the population, like sheep, can be herded in one direction or the other, whether it's about a pandemic or anti-Semitism. So much untoward stuff, just nasty, evil stuff going on. I guess the key is just to be skeptical, huh?
To be skeptical and do your own research.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, find some some alternative media that, has proven to be actually doing some journalism as opposed to repeating what the government is telling them.
Well, I know there was a lot of material given to you during the seminar. Maybe we can cover some more of that next week or in subsequent weeks. And as stuff comes to light, if you can get a report, that would be of great interest, I think, to our listeners, and we appreciate that. Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments, I want to plug their websites, creationmoments.com. And basically, it's about creation, as you might expect. It's scientific information that supports and teaches the biblical story of creation. Don, he's an expert, he's one of the finest teachers of Genesis I've ever run across. And here we are talking about his biochemistry background in pharmaceuticals it makes him an expert there, too. So we're grateful to you, Don. Thank you for what you brought us today. We'll look forward to more information as the weeks go by. Have a great week.
Okay. All right. You too.
Bye-bye.